Hollywood would just as soon forget 2014 when it comes to box office numbers. Despite the success of Guardians of the Galaxy and the arrival of the final Hobbit sequel, movie grosses are off about $500 million from last year. And as for quality, well, when movie critic Bob Mondello sat down to compile his 10 best list, he says the films are quirkier than usual, but his cup still runneth over.
Usually I'm conflicted when picking a favorite film of the year. This year, it's no sweat. I have flat out never seen a movie that took bigger chances for more intriguing rewards than Richard Linklater's Boyhood. Shooting over a dozen years, just a day or two each year, he captured his leading child, actor Ella Coltrane, growing from a precocious six-year-old, giving his father a hard time.
But, Dad, I mean, why is it all on us, though? You know, what about you? How was your week? You know, who do you hang out with? Do you have a girlfriend?
To a young man of 18, still giving his father a hard time.
You said that was going to be my car when I turned 16.
What?
I remember. I was in third grade, and you were taking me over to Anthony Nadar's house for his birthday. You were all like, oh, this is going to be Mason's when he turns 16.
I would never say that. Never.
He did, though.
It's hard to overstate the emotional impact of watching someone literally grow up before your eyes. Is Boyhood stunt filmmaking? Well, if so, it had some very classy competition. Director Alejandro Iñárritu's Birdman was already flying into meta territory just by casting Michael Keaton, a former superhero making a comeback, to play a former superhero making a comeback.
Let's go back one more time and show them what we're capable of.
But the director also upped the ante by shooting almost all of Birdman, including leaps out windows and fantasy sequences, to look as if the film were one continuous shot.
Music.
For pure directorial bravura, it would be hard to top Birdman, but other directors sure made a stab at it. Wes Anderson, for instance, in his delirious spoof of 1930s melodramas, The Grand Budapest Hotel. It stars Ralph Fiennes as an easily distracted concierge who romances dowagers in a resort that looks like a pink wedding cake perched atop a Swiss Alp.
I fear this may be the last time we ever see each other.
You're always anxious before you travel. I admit you appear to be suffering a more acute attack on this occasion, but truly and honestly, oh, dear God, what have you done to your fingernails?
I beg your pardon.
This diabolical varnish, the colour is completely wrong.
Oh, really? Don't you like it?
It's not that I don't like it.
The film is at least as easily distracted as its concierge, with flashbacks inside flashbacks, each with its own aspect ratio from widescreen to basically square. Yes, Anderson's films are an acquired taste, but Grand Budapest Hotel makes clear that it's a taste worth acquiring. Mike Leigh's exquisitely earthy biopic, Mr. Turner, could hardly be more different, a muscular, artful portrait of an artist. Actor Tim Spall grunts and snorts his way through the film as J.M.W. Turner, spitting on his canvases, stabbing them with brushes, attacking them in ways that make painting look almost like combat. But the results are incandescent. Every frame of Mr. Turner is worthy of framing. That's four. Other real-life figures in the year's best films include two who practiced civil disobedience while advocating for governmental change. Laura Poitras begins her scintillating documentary Citizen Four by reading one of the emails Edward Snowden sent her when he was first preparing to go public with his revelations of widespread government surveillance.
Laura, I am a senior government employee in the intelligence community. I hope you understand that contacting you is extremely high risk, and you are willing to agree to the following precautions before I share more. This will not be a waste of your time.
Call that the understatement of the year. The documentary Citizen Four unreels with the intensity of a thriller. Ava DuVernay crafted a no less passionate film, the historical epic Selma, in which Martin Luther King Jr. organizes the Alabama protests that would lead to the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965.
Those that have gone before us say, no more, no more. That means protest. That means march. That means disturb the peace. That means jail. That means risk. And that is hard.
And that is six of my top 10. The next three hail from overseas. Russia's Leviathan, a gorgeously shot tragedy about a little guy battling a corrupt state to save his home. Belgium's corporate downsizing drama, 2 Days, One Night, which follows Marion Cotillard as she struggles to save her job, and Sweden's Force Majeure, about a young father on a skiing vacation who screws up and is suddenly trying to save his marriage. The catalyst in his case is one of the ski resort's controlled avalanches that starts to seem not very controlled. It comes down the mountain straight at the family and at the camera, and, well, there's no other way to say it. Mom grabs the kids, Dad grabs his cell phone, and runs. When the powder settles, no one was hurt, but the family dynamic has been forever altered. Another marital drama, Love is Strange, rounds out my 10 favorite films. It's an intimate story about a gay couple, an artist and a choir director, who have been together for 39 years. When the choir director's church gets wind of the fact that they've had a wedding ceremony, it fires him, at which point their finances come apart and they have to turn to friends.
Now, it won't be long before I get another job, and shouldn't be long before we find another apartment, but in the meantime,
it's just a transition phase, probably just a week or two.
We need a place to stay.
What looked like a new beginning in Love is Strange instead starts to seem the beginning of the end. That's 10. It's an arbitrary number, and I'm not out of time, so I'm going to keep going. Two provocative war movies celebrated real-life war heroes. Clint Eastwood's wrenching American Sniper, set in Iraq, and the World War II-era Imitation Game, about the math genius who cracks the Germans' Enigma code.
I like solving problems, and Enigma is the most difficult problem in the world.
No, Enigma isn't difficult, it's impossible. Everyone thinks Enigma is unbreakable.
Good. Let me try, and we'll know for sure, won't we?
Leave it to Benedict Cumberbatch to make the impossible sound elementary. The East Indian comedy The Lunchbox struck me as the year's most savory romance, Edge of Tomorrow as its most underrated sci-fi flick, and Calvary, its most intriguing tale about the search for redemption, a corrosive one, mind you, that gets underway in an Irish chapel's confessional.
I'm here to listen to whatever you have to say. I'm going to kill you, Father. Certainly a startling opening line.
What follows that opening line in Calvary is an existential detective story. A trio of terrific low-budget films were centered on gay characters this year. The documentary Dog, about the real guy that Al Pacino played in Dog Day Afternoon. The Hitchcock-like thriller Stranger by the Lake. And the hugely engaging labor union comedy Pride. And speaking of engaging, you can have your animated Legos give me Big Hero 6 and the inflatable healthcare robot Baymax.
I will scan you for injuries.
Don't scan me.
Scan complete.
Unbelievable.
You have sustained no injuries. However, your hormone and neurotransmitter levels indicate that you are experiencing mood swings, common in adolescents. Diagnosis? Puberty.
Whoa, what?
That's nearly a second 10 to savor as we head into the barren cinematic dumping ground the studios always make of January. Look forward to horror sequels, misbegotten comedies, and, with luck, an occasional gem. I can vouch for Jennifer Aniston in Cake. Here's hoping there are others. I'm Bob Mondello.